Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And the beautiful thing is that it really led to where they set up that angle where, so like, AJ Styles, he was the champion, his contract expired, and then they made the decision to hold a tournament for a new champion. When did they tell you that you were going to become the next Impact World Champion?
I found out that day.
Oh, wow.
I had a feeling that it was going to be me, but I never asked. There's a bit of a weird culture at that point about the way they did it, you know, like, and I just, and you know, the guy running the company at that point was a bit, he kind of, you know, he was on a bit of a power trip, and, you know, just, you know, everyone just felt like he just enjoyed being the boss. And so I got the feeling that that's where they were going, just because I could tell from the, you know, you get a sense of this stuff with the way things are booked. And I never asked, because I thought, I'm not going to ask, because if I ask, they'll change it. You know, like, there's the likelihood that they'll say, okay, well, this kid thinks he's going to get it, you know, and so we'll do something else. So I just kept my mouth shut and showed up, and then that was it. Like, that day they said, I knew I was getting it when I saw Scott D'Amore there, because Scott D'Amore at the time didn't work for TNA, but he was my legitimate agent. He legitimately represented me and a few other guys, and he would always show up if one of his guys was getting the title. You know? So when he showed up, I kind of went, oh, okay, I know what's going on here. And then sure enough, they said, oh, it's you and Jeff Hardy, and, you know, this and that, and blah, 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 and you win the championship. And it was a great moment. Like, I didn't love the stuff that happened afterwards with AJ, but that was out of my control. You know, it was just bad timing.
So do you have any reflections about your time as champion that you could share with us about, to really understand what the demands of being the flag bearer for the company is like?
Well, you're the flag bearer if they let you be the flag bearer, right? Like, I should have been the flag bearer, but unfortunately, like, it was one of those things where they had thought about everything up to me, you know, up to me getting the championship, and then they hadn't thought about afterwards. So then it was, and then this is around the time where they became so obsessed with what people were saying on Twitter, you know, and online, that they would start to react to it. And to me, the minute you start reacting to the trolls is when you lose your power, because, like, trolls by definition are never going to be happy with what they see. So of course it's like, AJ's leaving, I can't believe you're doing this to him, blah 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 blah. So they tried to sort of make it into a storyline, but all it really did was kind of negatively affect me, because then it was like, oh, this guy's not really, you know, this guy's like a transitional champion, you know. And it was like, I was a little disappointed in that, because I felt like I got thrown under the bus. And so I obviously reacted a bit negatively in that respect. So, like, I worked my ass off to get to that point to be the champion, and then I felt like a patsy, because it was like, I was a pawn, see, in a bigger game. And it was like, once you realize that, then you sort of go, like, because I had a chance to leave, and I dare say I probably could have gone to WWE. I don't know for sure, but, you know, I've got emails from officials there that were pretty much, you know, you can sort of read between the lines and go, okay, you know, I probably could have gone, and I'm talking about a couple of years before that. And I chose to stay because I had this feeling even then. I was like, I think I could go all the way here and be the world champion. And there was a part of me that really wanted to do that, you know, just because I'd been on every part of the card. I'd been on the undercard, I'd been opening match, I'd been like dark match, I'd been explosion, you know, all the way through tag champions, all the way up, and I thought, I now want to see it through to the end and be the world champion. And then, you know, when I got it, it was like, I was just, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes. What it proved more than anything was that, like, I proved that I could make it, you know, to that level. And then the people who knew what really going on, they knew too, like Jeff Jarrett and obviously, you know, like David Garner and Billy even, you know, like they knew, like, okay, the stuff that happened after that, he was just, you know, in the wrong place at the wrong time. But they knew, but it was also enough to prove that I, you know, could carry the weight. So it is what it is. You know, I made money and it was a world champion.
So then eventually, as always happens in wrestling, you had to relinquish the championship to somebody else, and then you joined forces with Bram, who is another one who's a really talented guy, and you had a whole bunch of feuds with some of the Impact guys. What would you say stands out as your best opponents during that part of your time there?
Well, definitely Bram, I'd say, because the story was real. Like, the reason that the NWA stuff we've been doing is made such a significant impression on people in such a short period of time is because it's based in the reality of the situation, you know, authenticity. So people knew that Tom and I were legitimately friends and we had legitimately come up in the business together. So there was a real thing, you know, so, and especially because it involved my wife and it involved my kids, and it was like, we did it in a way that, because they had seen all that, because social media created, you know, that social media changed everything. You can't pretend, you know, you can't have a situation where, like, you're pretending to be one thing on television and then being something else on social media. If you're going to do it, you've got to do stories that where it all connects, because otherwise you insult people's intelligence. So you can't pretend to be like a big scary monster or this and that and then be like on vacation. You know, you can't pretend to be like to hate someone and then be like posing with them on a bus or going on vacation, you know, or when you're on a tour or something, like, or hanging out together. Like, you just can't do it. And it's not because, like, anyone's going, see, I told you it was fake. Everyone knows the business is a work. It's just about creating a thing where people can still suspend their disbelief, because I still believe that's what people really want to do. They really want to believe what they're seeing. They want to still feel it, right? And so if over these years I go, okay, they know that me and Tom are friends. That's how Brown was brought into the company, was that, you know, they said, of course, and even that, you know, instead of just being telling the truth and having them be like, we came up in the business together, they have to say, we grew up together, you know. And I said, why do we need to do, like, why don't we just tell the truth and we've been friends since you're 18? That's still a long time. You know, like, instead of, oh no, we were childhood friends, so then, you know, so now Graham has to be billed from King's Lynn, you know. And it's like, but that's not where he's from, and everyone in England knows that he's not from there, right? Because they can hear it in his accent.
Yep.
Like, anyone who's from England knew, they're like, he's not from King's Lynn, he's from Yorkshire, you know. And it's like, there were little things like that where, but, you know, of course they know better, you know, and that was just, so they were, even, but despite that, it still worked really well because there was that element of realness to it. You know, and then of course they shoehorned James Storm into it, or James Storm shoehorned himself into it. I don't know, one or the other, but it was like, you know, and then that's where it verged off into silliness again, you know. And it's like, we learned from all that, and that's where, like, Dave and Billy and myself and others involved, we've learned from that and gone, like, look, the storytelling today, in a way, you saw, we have to go backwards to go forwards. We just have to do it in a modern way, right? Because in the heyday, in the '80s, if you think about the storylines, the NWA storylines especially, they were still rooted in reality. You know, Flair and Dusty they did genuinely have a rivalry with each other. They did genuinely be like, I'm better than him, I draw more money than him, you know, I'm a bigger star than him, I'm more over than him. And they, what was really different about that behind the scenes than it wasn't in front of the camera? Only that they were saying it in a more outrageous way. But they genuinely had a rivalry.
Yep.
because it was about money and about prestige. So, like, you know, I just recently did a thing with Crimson, same thing, where he's like, we're friends, you know. So we pulled up all these pictures. He was a groomsman at my wedding, you know, and stuff like that. So it's like, we showed all that, and then I go, yeah, we're friends, but he's never quite made the level that I made, you know. So now it's like, oh, what a dick thing to say, right? Like, so, you know, it's like, I'm, why not? Like, if you, you know. The angle I've just, you know, the thing I'm now doing with Tommy Dreamer, those aren't pretend things. Those are real things. So,
I know,
even people in the business say to me, what's real and what's not, it's all real. Why not?
It's more organic that way.
Yeah, right. And the business is about making people feel something. You know, if you're just in it to impress people with your athletic moves, then, you know, you're going to get hurt quickly and you're not going to be remembered, in my opinion. That's just my opinion.
So then I wanted to ask you about, you had a short stint working with Pro Wrestling Noah. I know you won the GHC tag titles. I think that was with Samoa Joe also. So what was it like with the Japanese audience? Did they respond with more respect maybe than the American audience?
Well, I don't think, I don't, belt button. I mean, I enjoyed it. Like, Noah treated me very well. They paid me very well. They're very professional. Any time I've been to Japan, the experience has been incredibly professional. The fans are very, very polite, very respectful. The way they do things is very different. Like, the last time I was there for Inoki, you know, there were people, like, there were teenage girls, like, crying, you know, because they got to meet me and stuff. So that's a cool feeling. It's, you know, the way they present wrestling in a very different way. And that's just, you know, so it's like... You know, it's like being an actor and doing a movie or doing a play. You know, you're just kind of it's doing it a different way. Like, it's not my favorite because obviously you go to Japan and like you've got to earn that money. But every time I've been paid significantly better than I've been paid in the U.S. So it's like it's worth it for me. But you earn every bit of it because you know you have to wrestle very hard. I always have had to because of the positions I've been in, I've always been fairly featured matches, so you're required and expected to do a lot for it. Like, it's physically very demanding, and in my opinion, not necessarily as rewarding, because the audience are kind of conditioned to be quiet. You know, they're conditioned to sort of wait, because they know, okay, it's more is coming, more is coming, more is coming. So it's a different kind of situation, right? Like, I joke with guys sometimes that, like, you know, for me, the art of the business is predicated on pretending to hurt each other and acting like it hurts, whereas in Japan, it's like you hurt each other for real and pretend it doesn't hurt. To me, like that doesn't make any sense to me. But, you know, there's a different form of storytelling there, and if you can, you know, if you can do it right, then you'll make a lot of money. And I don't mind doing it from time to time. I wouldn't want to be there. I wouldn't want to be there all the time, but I don't mind going every now and then.
So then you ended up leaving Impact Wrestling. You joined Global Force Wrestling with Jeff Jarrett. Do you think that Jeff's vision for the GFW would have been a little bit more successful if he got, like, a distribution deal for the network to air some episodes?
Well, I mean, of course. I mean, you know, that goes without saying. I mean, anything's going to be more successful if you get a distribution deal. It had a lot of potential, that's for sure. Those early tapings that we did at the Orleans in Vegas, you know, we had Chael Sonnen and we had a bunch of real good bunch of talent, a lot of whom ended up in WWE and various or in New Japan or in different places. And it looked fantastic. We had Keith Mitchell in the truck, and then, you know, all the pieces were there. It just, you know, I don't know, it just didn't make it happen. I think that deep down, I don't know how much Jeff's motivation was really to make Global Force succeed as it was to stick it in TNA's eye. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Because he started that company, and, you know, in his mind, it was his company and his baby, and I think that there was a lot of bitterness there about, you know, Dixie and everything else. I don't know all the details, but I know there was resentment there, and I always thought that he cared more about sticking it to them than he did about making his own company successful. And the problem with that is that, you know, if you live like that, it's just a very negative space, and eventually that negativity comes back on you. You know, it's just been all a big convoluted mess with them and Handsome, and I just kind of washed my hands of the whole thing. So it's just like, this just doesn't feel right. It just feels like a whole big soap opera mess. So fortunately for me, when Billy came along with the NWA thing, I just saw it as a chance to just be involved with something with very little politics and very little nonsense, you know, where it was like, I can just focus on, like, let's just try and create something really good, right? Not like, let's do this, but let's do it to stick it to them and stick this to them and let's send a message to these people. It was just like, we just do our thing, you know, and make people care.
You know, some of the fans may not know, there was actually a short-lived thing there called Ring Ka King. You actually held the Ring Ka King Championship. It was like an expansion into India. I think you beat Matt Morgan for the championship. Did you think that Impact would have benefited more if they really tried to cultivate that programming in India with the size of the market they have there?
Well, they did. Well, they did in a way, because honestly, most people don't know this, but they're Indian. The TV deal was really like what kept them afloat when the Spike deal went belly up, and then Destination America, and, you know, and then DePop and everything. They're India. They were getting pretty good money from 76, I think what happened was that Rinka King was, they wanted something for their own, you know, their own market. And then I think in once they looked at the costs versus the numbers they were doing, they realized that they could get pretty similar numbers just by getting, just by taking Impact, you know, just playing Impact there. So it's sort of disappointing in a way because we enjoyed doing that and it was cool to be on a you know, a separate thing just for that, just for them. But frankly, there's not enough good Indian talent. Like, they wanted it to be something where the Indian talent could be the focal point, and they're not very good. They don't know what to do, you know, because they've never had wrestling there, and you can't learn this overnight. I think the Indian producers, they thought that, like, oh, well, we'll get these guys over here, and then we'll, you know, they'll teach these guys how to be wrestling stars, and then by the time they leave, you know, we'll have our own stars. And it's like, you know, you can't teach someone this stuff in a few weeks, you know, and the only guy that came out of it was Shearer, who, like, I, you know, who I worked, that we all did, but it was me especially, worked our butts off to get him even to a level where he was, like, remotely capable of having, like, a passable match. And now I just heard that he got signed by WWE, and I'm just laughing, like, of course he did, you know, like, of course he did.
Yeah, I think, but that was, like, about a week and a half ago.
Guy, but it's like he didn't know a headlock from a headlight, you know, and that's just, and it, like, he genuinely had never wrestled before. So it was like, I think they realized that it was going to be a long, long time to make that happen. And so in the end, they just ended up just trying to deal with TNA just to have Impact instead.
And then you actually made a return to Impact last year. It looked like they were getting ready to really turn the corner. And then they did something that I have found to be so egregious. They took that global championship off of you and gave it to Alberto El Patron. And no offense to Alberto, but I'm a Magnus fan, and I was upset at that because it was exciting to have this champion come in and be a legit star. Was that their booking decision? And eventually you ended up leaving the promotion relatively sure that you're arriving. Was that your decision?
Well, I didn't leave the promotion. I never joined the promotion. You know, I came in just to do that. Like, I refused to sign a contract. I knew the situation they were in, and I just knew that there was no money to be made. So, you know, Alberto is making money, and I just looked at it and went, all right, well, look, if it's what you want, pay me this and I'll do it and then I'll leave. And that was it. Like, it was just a business decision. I mean, in that respect, like, that belt didn't mean much, you know, let's be honest. That global force belt didn't really mean a whole lot. And it wasn't like I was sitting there going to go, well, hold on a minute, you know, like, we'd done nothing with the belt. And, you know, they wanted to do that to, you know, help him, then great. And I was very, I probably wouldn't have done it at all had it not been the fact that I wanted to work with Alberto. So I don't have any resentments with that. I like Alberto. He's a good talent.
And then that takes us right up to now, where your reign as NWA champion. I know the previous champion, Tim Storm, he held the title for over 400 days or something like that. And you had an opportunity to face him. It was at CZW's Cage of Death 19, and that's when you walked out as the new champion. Did you feel the emotion in that moment of holding that storied championship for the first time?
Sure. It was a unique situation. Like, I think, looking back now, I think, but honestly, I don't think we would do it at CZW again. But I think it was just one of those situations where they felt the time was right, the momentum was there, and that was the show that presented itself as the right, as the opportune place to do it. I tell you what, I did feel this, as I felt the emotion of Tim losing it. I felt the emotion of the people sort of really feeling for him, which is that's what we wanted at that point. It was that sort of, Ivan Drago beating Apollo Creed type of situation where it was like, oh man, you know, like he just got, like he just, this young, you know, this guy in his prime just destroyed this guy, you know, and it was like that disappointment and everything. And, you know, Tim's story was so unique, and they'd done such a good job of making people care about him that was the launching point for us. We said, this is the moment, this is the point to do it, is to get people, like, fired up. And yeah, I mean, who would have thought that? I just had this conversation with Sam Roberts the other day where he said, I never thought that in, like, 2017, at the end of 2017, that I'd be, like, it would be, like, a headline-grabbing thing that someone won the NWA title. You know, like, but within a few short months, it was like, when you won it, I was like, wow, you know, like, holy crap, like, what's going to happen now? That's the main objective of the business. That's what we're in the business to do. So.
Yeah, and the internet's been going crazy because the buzz is all about you've got this quest with the 10 pounds of gold. You're defending the title. I think originally they said like 20 defenses in over in 60 days. And it's, I mean, what has that been like for you so far?
Yeah, it's, well, a lot of them were my existing bookings I already had. So then when I got the title, suddenly all these promoters were like, oh, can we make it a title match? Can we do this? Can we do that? And that's where it just, again, organic, we saw it as an opportunity to go, yeah, well, why don't we, if instead of making one or two of them, because at first it was like, we said, okay, well, look, if you want it to be an NWA title match, then all that's, you know, the terms have to be agreed by the NWA. The opponent has to be approved and all the rest of it. And then it just became so consistent with everyone that they all, and then everyone would do that, and it sort of just kept making the buzz bigger and bigger. But then we said, well, let's just make them all title matches. You know, like, let's just, if we're going to do it with one of it, and then because people sort of really responded well to that, because they started to say, wow, this is just kind of like the old NWA champions of the past, where he's going all over the world defending the title against all comers. We said, yeah, that is what it should be. You know, and again, like that wasn't something necessarily was planned. It kind of happened organically, and then just because of where my bookings happen to be, some here, some overseas, and what have you, and with a real range of different opponents. But then that's where people started to go, okay, you know. So in a way, we've taken something old and traditional, and then reignited it with a sort of modern twist. So it's kind of like the traditional values with the, you know, for the modern era.
And then at the end of every interview, I always do this thing. It's like a fast five questions, just simple five things. First thing comes to your mind, kind of thing. So who's your favorite opponent you've ever wrestled?
It's a toss up. Samoa Joe, AJ Styles, or Jeff Hardy.
Okay. How about where was your favorite venue to perform in?
Wembley Arena or Manchester Arena.
Okay. How about who would have been your dream opponent if you could wrestle anybody?
Shawn Michaels.
That's one of my favorite people of all time also. And if you could bring one wrestler back from the past for a match, who would you want to face?
Andre the Giant.
Wow. The stories I've heard, I think he would intimidate me so much.
Oh, I'd be terrified. I'd be absolutely terrified. But, you know, there will never be another like that lore and that legendary status, you know, like just for me, like to have been able to say I wrestled Andre the Giant, but, you know, I did a little bit with Harley Race early on in my career, went to his training camp and got to sit with Harley, and he showed me all pictures and stuff, and he showed me a picture of him slamming Andre, you know, and I was just like, wow, you know. And Marty Jones is a legendary English wrestler, and, you know, Tony Sinclair is a very well-respected English wrestler who now lives in Germany and was a booker in Germany, and he's a lot in Japan, and he would tell me these stories about, you know, tagging with Andre and stuff, and I just go like, oh my God, you know, what an unbelievable, you know, just to have been in the ring with Andre.
How about who's the best promoter you've ever worked with?
Best promoter? I'd say that's difficult, because most successful is probably Brian Dixon, because he had a system and his emphasis was on business. And I learned a lot from Brian, and it was a very valuable place for me to be, to get to wrestle in front of real good paying crowds. You know, so frequently, like, it's just something that so many guys don't get a chance to do, and so many guys from my generation didn't get a chance to do, which is one of the reasons why, one of the things people say about me a lot is, they just seem so natural in front of an audience, you seem so comfortable, you seem so, you know, and I said, well, look, I came up in a more traditional way. Like, I would take offense sometimes with some of the old-timers and kind of imply, like, oh, you're paid to do, you know, those kind of thing. And I'd be like, hold on, like, I wrestled 6 days a week, like, in front of, like, full houses, like, of paying crowds, because Brian Dixon was such a good promoter. You know, yeah, I didn't make a lot of money, but, like, that's because he didn't need to pay me a lot of money. That's just economics. But, like, yeah, like, and I learned a lot from him in the sense of, he knew what he wanted, and his emphasis was putting butts in seats, and that's something that isn't necessarily everyone's emphasis today. You know, to me, the two guys who are still around, whose main emphasis was always to put butts in seats before anything else, were Brian Dixon and Vince McMahon, and that's why they're still in business today. And anyone else whose vision is something else, fall by the wayside, because it's business first.
Absolutely. Well, I really want to thank you for taking some time with us today. I really hope the audience can just feel how exciting it is right now. If you're a fan of the National Wrestling Alliance, hopefully you have that championship for a really long time. I love what you're doing. This quest with the gold is awesome. It makes me feel like Ric Flair back in, like, I think it was 86. He did the Great American Bash and was defending against everybody. And it's just, it feels exciting for the NWA again. It's something I feel like wrestling has been missing for so long, and now we finally have this breath of fresh air. And people are, I see the shows, the Championship Wrestling from Hollywood has been really helpful, I think. And I love the exposure, because that's the belt. That's the one belt that's been here for so long. So for all these people who tune into WWE, you know, and I know my students are listening, they always ask about historical stuff. That's the belt you look at for history. That's the one that really has always meant the most to the business, just my opinion. So hopefully...
Right. And it's really the belt, and it's really the belt that kind of spawned all the other belts.
Absolutely.
Like, to begin with, that was the only belt, and then it was later on that, you know, they decided, oh, well, we'll introduce our own belt, you know, and all the rest of it. But, you know, going back to, like, Buddy Rogers and, you know, guys like that, it was like, that was the world championship, like, and I think now, you know, again, in a modern era, like, it might have needed a bit of a rest, but now people are realizing that you can't create history. You know, you can make new belts, and you can make this is the so and so belt, and this is the other big belt, and this is another belt. But what you can't do is you can't create a lineage. You can't create decades of history. And so when, you know, so every now and then you'll see some sort of newer fans or sort of, you know, younger fans who are a bit trolly, so it's like, why don't you change that belt, you know, and it's like, okay, update the belt. And it's like, would you update the Stanley Cup?
Yeah, you know, that's what makes
change,
that.
Would you change the Super Bowl? No.
That's like, what makes that so endearing. That belt's been there forever. That's the appeal. It's that image. Right. Like, I remember seeing a picture of, I think it was Tommy Rich for, I know he had a short reign, but even Tommy Rich, that's back in like 82, and we still have the same championship. That is legacy. That's awesome.
Right. And fortunately we have some of that footage from Houston and stuff like that. So it's like, we can show people that timeline of, you know, Harley and Dory Funk, Terry Funk, Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, you know, all these guys holding the same belt, and now I get to be the one holding it, which is, you know, it's a huge honor, and it does a lot for us. And that's, so I encourage anyone who's listening to check out youtube.com/NWA and check out the 10 Pounds of Gold series. You know, each episode is around 10 minutes, so you can, I think we're episode like 17 or 18 now, so you can kind of binge watch, you know, the whole thing. We're going to start breaking it down into seasons, I think, so people can start to, you know, take it bit by bit and go right back to the beginning. And yeah, it's just, you know, we like what we're doing, and we hope that other people like it too.
Well, again, thank you so much for taking time out of your day for us. I'm hoping maybe one day we get to see you on WWE programming in the future. Is that something you're hoping to do at some point?
Who knows? If it's right for business, then yeah.
Awesome. I know I would love to see it. I'm a huge fan. But thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you very much.